This episode of Lawyers Tell All is brought to you by the Intake Academy. Are you ready to convert more callers to qualified cases, rapidly qualify good cases, and transform unqualified prospects to advocates for your firm, whether you're able to handle their case or not? Visit www.intakeacademy.com and discover how to cement relationships with more of your ideal clients. Get them to commit to you and send you more referrals than you ever thought possible. Welcome to the Lawyers Tell All podcast, where Chris Mullins, the preeminent sales and communications consultant in the legal industry, shows you how it looks through lawyers' eyes. Here, innovators in the trenches provide powerful insights that help you connect with new clients, handle the sometimes harsh realities of the legal profession, and embrace the mindsets needed to succeed. Be sure to visit our website at www.lawyerstellall.com. And while you're there, subscribe to us via your favorite network. Now, lean in, tune in, and let's take a deep dive.
Chris Mullins with Lawyers Tell All at Intake Academy. And today I am interviewing Bethany Corbin. And Bethany is going to tell you a little bit about herself. Go ahead, Bethany.
Hi, Chris. Thank you so much for having me today. I am an attorney by background. I am actually the managing partner and founder of Women's Health Innovation Consulting, which is the first law firm in the U.S. that focuses exclusively on helping women's health innovators. So we're doing women's digital health day in and day out. I'm also the CEO and co-founder of Femme Innovation, which works to provide legal and business resources to early stage women's health founders.
Okay, so just give little examples of what each of those look like, you know, because digital innovators and, you know, things like just examples. I'm really excited.
Yeah, absolutely. So I work in it's a relatively new space. It was actually coined in 2016 called FemTech. And so what FemTech really is it's any digital health solution that's geared towards women or to symptoms or diseases that women might experience differently than men. So the common things that you've probably heard of in this field are things like your period tracking apps, infertility apps, maternal health wearables. There's some really cool stuff coming out in menopause now that you can have as a wearable that kind of cools your body down if you're having a hot flash. Mm-hmm. So those are some of the types of products that we work with on a daily basis. There's also some products out there that are going more into the life sciences and biotech field as we're thinking about things like cancer, longevity, elderly aging populations. We're getting some types of innovations in those areas that are really exciting. For instance, you know, a blood test for ovarian cancer or a device that can actually be used as you're doing your self breast exam each month to analyze the tissue and to send that into AI so that you can help monitor on your own if there's any changes in your breasts. So those are the types of things that we work with.
Okay. And so how does the FemTech lawyer come into all this? How does that happen? I mean,
yes.
I don't know. You can give me some examples there.
Yes. So I have branded myself as the FemTech lawyer. And partly that is because of my passion for helping women's health innovators and really working on the legal issues that women's health innovators face. So for instance, my practice deals with almost everything that you could imagine for an early or a mid-stage startup. That might be things like helping a company form its Delaware corporation, helping a company determine how to do its initial founder equity split. I also do a lot of work in data privacy. And that's become a really huge issue in the FemTech field, especially since the overturning of Roe versus Wade. And there's been a significant loss of trust from the public in using these devices. So I work really closely with these companies to figure out how they can best protect consumer data, how they can safeguard it, what data should they be collecting, how do we use it responsibly, and how do we use it in a way that can fuel research downstream instead of selling it to places like data brokers. So that's a lot of what I do. I also do some very preliminary IP work, though not a ton of IP work. And then we work a lot with contracts. So a lot of the companies that we help are trying to get larger partnerships with healthcare organizations and clinics. We help them get their processes and procedures in place and work with them throughout the contract drafting and negotiation process.
Okay. Now, Is it about 10 years you've been an attorney?
Yes, I'm afraid to admit it.
Oh, so what got you to decide to be an attorney?
You know, it's interesting. Like so many other people, I thought I was going to be a doctor when I went to college, and I was terrible at science and math. So I was not the kind of doctor anybody would ever want touching their medical.
Yeah.
So I had to pivot. And I started thinking, you know, what was I passionate about? Because I was obviously passionate about healthcare. As some background, my mom had been in the healthcare system since I was 8. We dealt with her having a chronic illness and continual medical gaslighting. And so I wanted to make sure nobody else had a similar experience. But I was very puzzled on how to make a difference now that I was not well suited to become a doctor. Mm-hmm. So it was actually a different personal experience that propelled me into law. I found that law really matched, you know, I loved research and writing. I loved learning new things and doing critical thinking. And then very unexpectedly, I was also the victim of domestic violence. And that was my first year in college, very unexpected for me. And so as I navigated the criminal law side, you know, pursuing charges my perpetrator, I got really interested in the legal field. And so that's actually what initially pushed me into law. Mm-hmm. And coming out of law, I actually started doing something in financial services and litigation and absolutely hated it. Mm-hmm. So I then wanted to pivot. I wanted to find something I was still passionate about. And really, you know, my experiences in healthcare, my experience as a woman going through domestic violence, all of that culminated into saying, I wanted to do something in healthcare. I wanted to do something to help women not ever go through these experiences again and really have advocates on their side. So I went into healthcare. And then from there, I went and focused my practice specifically on women's health innovation.
Okay, so, all right. So women's health innovation, and then you were talking about like domestic violence, that kind of, and you wanted to help women to never have to deal with that again, right?
Yeah.
So give me an example. Tell me who your client is. Give me an example of a client.
Yeah, so we have a couple different clients. You know, our ideal client right now is a company that is probably in its very early to mid stages of life, right? So anywhere kind of between I've just started my idea yesterday to I'm about 2 or 3 years into my idea and my project, and I haven't quite raised my Series A or Series B level funding. Those are the companies that we make the most impact in. We also, with that ideal client profile, we're working with any type of company that is building a solution with any type of impact on women's healthcare. It doesn't have to be reproductive healthcare. It can be something like safety, right? Wellness. It can be something like cardiovascular care, because that impacts women differently. Anything that is really taking a look at the gendered nature of how women experience different illnesses or symptoms and making sure that they get the care they need. In addition, it's got to be something that's digital, right? We don't do a lot with kind of brick and mortar facilities. We want solutions that are going to be much more easily accessible to women, no matter where they are. So a lot of our clients are focused on digital health, whether it's building a telehealth company, whether it's building a wearable, whether it's building an app. Those are the types of clients that we're typically serving on a daily basis.
So like even women's mental health.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
Exactly. Yeah.
What are the most popular kind of digital products for women that you kind of deal with?
Yeah. You know, whenever we think about popularity, I would say that the ones focused on reproductive health are still the most popular. Things like your period tracking apps, things that have to do with ovulation or fertility or getting pregnant, and things that deal with pregnancy care, whether it's tracking your baby, right, or tracking your own personal health from pregnancy up through the postpartum period. And I would say that those are the most popular for a couple of reasons. The first being that in you know, the United States and worldwide, we have such a conflation of women's health with reproductive health. And so whenever people are thinking about femtech, that's just automatically where their mind is going for solutions that they're going to look at. Mm-hmm. Additionally, that's where all the innovation has really happened for the past couple of years. We're only now starting to branch out from reproductive healthcare into things like cancer and longevity and menopause. So that part of the industry is much less developed than the reproductive healthcare. So for that reason, I think a lot of the products that people naturally think about and assume with femtech are kind of those period tracking, ovulation tracking, fertility apps.
Yeah. And what about like weight loss for women?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So weight loss is also popular. There are a couple of different solutions. And specifically, what we've seen is, in addition to typical like coaching apps, right? That's been popular for a while. But now, of course, we have the weight loss drugs that are on the market, and that has significantly boomed. What we're seeing is these applications now starting to integrate telehealth solutions so that they can prescribe those types of weight loss pills and weight loss injections for women. So that's been a shift that we've actually seen. But yes, weight loss is one. We've seen a rise too in mental health applications, not necessarily just targeting women, but definitely having women as a subset of their population as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so I'm looking at my notes here. How does your current work differ from the earlier, let's just say, big law?
Substantially different. So as I mentioned, right, I did start my career in big law. I worked at two large law firms, both very different in their own rights. You know, the first I worked at was in Charlotte, and that's where I really started doing financial services and litigation work. And it just was not for me. Yeah. Litigation was not something I was interested in doing. And after that point in time, I switched. I went to a law firm in Washington, D.C. And it's funny because I started in their technology and telecommunications practice, but I was getting my healthcare LLM at the same time. And so I actually did very, very little work for the practice group I was hired in, and instead did the majority of my work for their healthcare department and their IP departments, which I absolutely loved. But of course, you have the big law experience, right? Is completely different than being a solo law firm practitioner, right? You have the incredible pressure that comes with the billable hours. Your clients are often much more sophisticated, right? And they're larger than what I'm dealing with right now. And so you have a lot of different levels that you're interacting with different clients, right? When I say different clients, I mean different levels within that organization for who's in charge of the project. Whereas now I'm dealing with the founders and the CEOs themselves. I've never talked to a founder or CEO, right, of one of those large insurance companies or healthcare organizations. Mm-hmm. So it's a bit different that way. It's also different in kind of the reporting chain internally, right? Who you're talking to, who, you know, the partners or your clients instead, and you're kind of communicating up the chain of command. Now I'm communicating directly with my clients. I'm responsible for all of those relationships that I'm building. It's a much more personalized experience where I feel very connected with my clients now compared to the larger corporate clients that I had before, where I felt at least one level removed, almost like they weren't really my clients.
Now, so you've been an attorney for 10 years. How long have you been doing the innovative women's health and all of that? How long has that been happening for?
Yeah, so I've been doing women's health work. Gosh, I started in about 2018. And I also had a stint as a law professor. And that's actually when I first came across the term femtech for the first time.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and so that's really what caused me to go into that realm, was my passion for women's health, the fact that this was something nobody was talking about. And then around that same time, I had my own women's health experience and navigated the trajectory of healthcare as a patient. So that's really when I switched over into femtech, was about 2 years after its creation. And then before that, and I had been in big law, my entire career before that, and really, really did enjoy it. You know, I know there's a lot that gets said about big law. I had an amazing experience once you put aside, you know, the pressure and the hours that you have to work, but I had a great experience. The problem was I didn't feel like I was doing anything meaningful with my legal degree, to the point where I didn't feel like I was helping to create a better world. And that's really what I thought I could do in the femtech space.
Now, your own health issue, was that the tumor?
Yes. Yeah. So it was very interesting. I'm one of those people who goes for my annual checkups every year, right? I'm somebody who is very health conscious. And I went for an annual checkup and got told that I had a pelvic mass that was essentially the size of somebody who was 6 months pregnant. And that was very shocking to me. And, you know, as I started digging into this, I realized that 80% of women will have fibroids and there's no pill, right? The most common treatment and the only cure is a hysterectomy. And there are very few minimally invasive options out there. And because of my size, I did not qualify for any of them, the size of my tumors. So I actually had to undergo a 7-hour surgery at Mayo Clinic, which is longer than what it takes to do a routine heart transplant. And that was just incredibly shocking to me. I was under medicated, you know, doctors were dismissing my pain. And I realized that this is something that's quite common for women, and we really need to get better solutions out there. So that's what really fueled my transition.
And so the products that you work with, they could help something like this, like what you're talking about that happened to you?
They can.
You know, like an app?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, not even just apps. You know, there are apps where you can track symptoms, right? And see if, you know, maybe their symptoms correlate to an illness or a disease that takes on average, you know, 7 to 8 years to get diagnosed. Mm-hmm. But there's also some really cool products coming out there in the life sciences side that use devices that can go into the body and actually distribute medicine. There's some that are trying to find ways in order to do that to target, you know, cancer cells or tumor cells, others that can be used in there to deliver medicine into the uterus. So there's all those types of solutions that we just need to get past those clinical trial phases and out onto the market so that they can actually start to make a huge difference.
Like I would think that the more virtual telehealth practices out there, firms out there that cater to really listening and hearing what the women are saying, you know, and not just shoving it aside or guessing, are like, yeah, it's just part of life. You know, it's just your age. That would make a really big difference, you know, for women, really.
Oh, it truly would. You know, and that's some of what is quite puzzling, right? Is that women are making 80% of healthcare decisions, right? We're utilizing more healthcare services. And yet there are so few solutions out there that are targeted to our health and that, you know, are looking at the ways in which, for instance, drugs, right, or treatment options impact women differently. And honestly, it has been a struggle for a lot of these entrepreneurs that I work with to even get male venture capitalists to listen to their products and to fund them, even though it makes business sense. And part of that is that women's health has been so neglected. We don't talk about the female body, that it's oftentimes these founders have to go to male VCs and give them, you know, a women's body education 101 before they can even pitch their ideas. So it's just shocking. There have been studies that show, you know, if you increase the amount that's invested in women's health by even a small percentage, it puts back billions of dollars into the economy. And yet we are still such an underfunded industry.
Mm-hmm. I remember when, like I used to have terrible, 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 periods, like really for years and years and years and years. I mean, really long time struggle with it, emotionally.
Yeah.
Physically, flow, all of it. And not even my GYN, whether it was a male or a female, really didn't have solutions. They talked about the fibroids. They talked about hysterectomies. Wasn't going to go there. And, but I never felt like even the doctors themselves, again, women or men, they just didn't really know what to do. And I basically waited it out like for years until, you know, I was in menopause. But I mean, life was not fun. You know, it was really difficult and scary. So I can see how that would really be helpful to other people.
Yeah. And your experience is unfortunately all too common. And you know, as somebody who suffered very similarly, you know, and was told that the only option was to go on birth control or nothing, right? And you suffer. Mm-hmm. You know, that doesn't seem like a fair choice for women, especially those who can't take birth control or don't want to take birth control, especially with the side effects and the increase of blood clots. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's no real good options there. And a lot of doctors, as you mentioned, are not trained on how to handle this. You know, menopause is one instance as well, where doctors have such limited training, even though every female is going to go through menopause. Right. Yet there's a statistic that says that doctors spend less than 4 hours of training in their entire medical school on menopause. And it takes so long for women to get the diagnoses that they need. They're often told that their symptoms are in their head. And it's very, very sad and uncomfortable reality that we face in modern medicine today.
And the depression part of it, or just a lot of women's health issues is depression kind of, I mean, it's awful.
Yes.
It really is. It can just change your life completely. Yeah.
Hugely. Yeah. And it's very sad. And that's, you know, one of the interesting things that we see in femtech is really the fact that so many of these founders are creating these companies because they have had those personal experiences that they never want anybody else to go through. And they're really trying to make a difference. And that's just one of the things I think that makes this industry so unique.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Okay. And so what are you passionate about? So I know it's like a loaded question after this discussion and your enthusiasm and everything, but you know, what are you passionate about?
Yeah. You know, so I think the obvious one is that I'm passionate about women's health, right? Obviously transforming where we go in the future and making it so we have a cohesive voice and we're demanding better than what we have gotten today, because our power to make this change is huge. As long as we band together and we actually demand the care that we deserve. So that is one thing. You know, the other thing that I'm passionate about too is helping other lawyers and, you know, younger lawyers and law students, helping them try to figure out how to navigate this changing world when we're thinking about legal careers. You know, because so often, especially in law school, I was taught that the correct path is you go to OCI, you get a job at a large law firm, and you stay there and you make partner and you potentially have no life. And that is the track. And if you don't follow that track, there's something wrong with you, or you're not a good lawyer. And mm-hmm. So I followed that track. And as somebody who did everything that they were taught to do, I am now somebody who owns my own law practice. That's not the traditional career that you would think. And I've never been happier and more fulfilled than I am today. So I really value giving back to the legal community and law schools and law students and helping them understand all of the different career options out there for them, because there's no one right path. And I think that law schools sometimes do students a disservice that way.
Yeah. And they're, you know, they're helping them to feel like you're normal. There's nothing yes. wrong. There's nothing. And I like to get involved too, with that kind of thing with students and you know, schools, because none of them still in this day and age teach anything about business.
No, litigation is it.
Yeah. And so, you know, when they're part of a small or large law firm, they still have to communicate with clients and know how to do it and care and have empathy and they don't, and they're not taught that at all. And it's just blows my mind, but yeah, 100%, 100%.
No, I fully agree. Yeah. And, you know, for me too, it's also about helping law students understand and lawyers understand that it's okay to try something and pivot if you don't like it. As somebody whose career mm-hmm. has had multiple pivots, you know, femtech mm-hmm. wasn't even thing when I went to law school. So had I not been open to pivoting and changing courses and potentially starting from the bottom and building up again, I would not be in the industry I'm at today.
Yeah, I think it's wonderful. So that's great. So you can kind of be like a mentor to them and show, just tell them the details of your path so that they exactly. can potentially go. Yeah, wonderful. What else would you like everybody to know?
Yeah, so you know, if anybody knows, you know, wants to reach out, wants to get in contact, right, wants to learn more about femtech, you know, we absolutely need more lawyers in this space. So feel free to reach out to me. You can find me on LinkedIn. I'm at linkedin.com/in/BethanyCorbin. You can find me on Instagram at femtechlawyer. And then you can reach out to me at my email is bethany@feminnovation.com.
Wonderful. Wonderful. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you so much for having me, Chris. I truly appreciate it.
100%. All right, everyone. Chris Mullins with Lawyers Tell All. So long. Bye-bye, everybody.
Thank you for tuning in to Lawyers Tell All, where Chris Mullins takes you on a journey with lawyers in the trenches who show you the realities of what it takes to succeed in this chaotic, crowded, ever-changing profession. Remember to visit our website at www.lawyerstellall.com. and enjoy even more great episodes like this one. Again, while you're here, subscribe to us via your favorite network. We look forward to seeing you next time on Lawyers Tell All.